Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Nimi, being a self-realized soul, considered that this life is flickering. Therefore, instead of waiting long for Vasishta, he began performing the sacrifice with other priests. Purport. Chanaka Pandit says, Shariram kshana vidvamsi kalpanta stayino gunaha. The duration of one's life in the material world may end at any moment, but if within this life one does something worthy, that qualification is depicted in history eternally. Here is a great personality, Maharaj Nimi, who knew this fact. In the human form of life, one should perform activities in such a way that at the end he goes back home, back to Godhead. This is self-realization. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Maharaj Nimi, being a self-realized soul, considered that this life is flickering. Therefore, instead of waiting long for Vasishta, he began performing the sacrifice with other priests. So, in the verse, that point is being made again in the verse, that life is flickering. It can end at any moment. So I was just thinking of something. I thought it was in this purport, but it's that example that Prabhupada gives of tottering like a drop of water on a lotus leaf, isn't it? That there's a drop of water on a lotus leaf, and the drop can fall at any moment. There's no guarantee how long we're going to live. So life is flickering, but there is a guarantee that it is going to end. You know, there's a guarantee it will end. There's no guarantee that it will last, but there is a guarantee it will end. So Maharaj Nimi, because he was a self-realized soul and he was aware of this fact, he thought, let's not waste time. Let's do it now. So Srila Prabhupada has made that point clearly that he said, from the very beginning of life or from the moment of understanding its significance, one should take to Krishna consciousness. I'm paraphrasing, but that's the point. He says, either from the very beginning of life or from the point where you realize its importance, the importance of self-realization, then we should dedicate ourselves to self-realization, giving up other desires in life. Because it's a big gamble to waste time. Sometimes we have so many plans or so many concerns, you know, like, should I get married? Should I not get married? Which ashram should I be in? Which job should I do? I get in a job, should I go for promotion? Should I not go for promotion? You know, actually, it's described in the Madhurya Kadambini. I think it's viewed a bit kalpa. Yeah, where he gives Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives about 1,000,001 different quotes from the Bhagavatam. One of them is that you should stay at home, be married, and make advancement. And the other one is you should give up family life and take to sannyas. So then the devotee is flickering between these things, you know. Now, the problem with it is that if we spend our whole life thinking about what's going to happen with our body, then we don't make any significant advancement in Krishna consciousness. That's the problem. So the understanding has to come that we're under the grip of prarabdha karma. It's another big talking point, prarabdha karma. Do devotees experience prarabdha karma or do they not experience prarabdha karma? Some people say, the Vaishnava Acharyas say, that the process of bhakti is so powerful that it uproots all karma, including prarabdha. Prarabdha means the sanchit, agama, and prarabdha. We're here now. There's an example. A person owns a field. Now, in that field, in India at least, and in other traditional cultures, they harvest the crops I've seen this, very interesting. I've seen it in Gujarat, in my in-law's farm in the village. They have the house, and they have like the kitchen, and then there's a wall, and then in the next room is the grain store, and the grain store is an empty room that goes all the way up to the roof, and they fill it from the roof at harvest season. They fill it all the way up, and then there's a little hatch in the wall down the bottom, so when they need some grains or some flour or whatever, they open the hatch and it all falls out however much they want, and then they close the hatch. And that's what they do. So then the next harvest, hopefully there's still some left, and they pile it in on top. So they have the field. Now, Sanchit Agama Prarabdha. Sanchit is the grain which is already stored in that room. Agama is the grain which is growing in the field. And prarabdha is the grain that you're eating today. Meaning, we have a stock of karma in our karmic bank account, if you like. And that's called, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Sanchit. Sanchit karma. There's a karmic bank account. Now, there's a prarabdha, which is a stock of karma which we have in this life, for this body, and we're experiencing in the form of happiness and distress. And our life in this world, that's our prarabdha. Sometimes we're very hungry, there's nothing to eat, that's our prarabdha. Sometimes there's so much cake, you're eating it until you're sick, you know. So because of your past pious activities, you have loads of cake. And then because of your past impious activities, you don't have any cake. So that's our prarabdha. And then Agama is what we're doing in this life, which is developing new karma for the future. Agama. So the process, everyone agrees that, when I say everyone, I mean gyanis, yogis, bhaktas. Everyone agrees that the process of yoga is powerful enough to destroy sanchit and agama. Because through spiritual realization, we should come to a point of realizing that we're not the body. If we're not the body, we should have no attachment to what goes on with the body. And if we have no attachment to what goes on with the body, then there's no question of any future karma. If we have an attachment to what goes on with the body, it means we haven't realized transcendental knowledge properly, and we're developing future karma. So if we're acting with raga and dvesha, attachment and aversion, then we should know that we're building more karma for the future, for future lives. However, through the process of yoga, we can become free from future karma. And through the process of yoga, we can also become free from past, like our bank account, our karmic bank account will be wiped out. There's a point of disagreement on prarabdha, whether the process of yoga can wipe out prarabdha karma. And there are different opinions given by different acharyas from different traditions. And generally, specifically it said, that the process of bhakti is powerful enough that it will wipe out prarabdha karma. Now, the problem is, there's a few problems. And one of the problems is that prarabdha karma means this body. So then when a person attains to Krishna prema, then his body should disappear. You know, his body should disappear. So Srila Prabhupada's body didn't disappear after he attained Krishna prema. So we have to question then. So it's explained by in different ways. And one of the ways it's explained is that the reason prarabdha is dissolved is because that person has no attachment whatsoever with that body anymore. We may see that the body is acting, but for that person, he hasn't even got a body. Like Parikshit Maharaj, in Canto 12, it's described that when he was given the prediction, when Takshak comes and bites your foot, you won't even notice. You won't even notice what happens with the body, because you've gone from this body already. He's already gone from the body. So people who are not liberated will see that he's still got a body. But from his point of view, he doesn't have a body, because his prarabdha, his connection with that body has been cut. His connection has been cut. So it's not so straightforward as just to say, like, we can say things like, yeah, process of bhakti destroys prarabdha, but we have to really understand in detail how it destroys our karma. Now, if that realization is not coming, then we should know that we're still bound to the body. You know, like if we get ill and then we become disturbed, I mean, that's our, well, that's my level at least in Krishna consciousness. The body gives some pain and we become very disturbed by the body. Or there's some social, you know, something happens in the family, we become very disturbed by the body. It means we're still affected by the body. Now, because we're affected by the body, we're still influenced by prarabdha karma, is the point. So one point is how exactly the prarabdha, the devotee is released from prarabdha karma. The other point is whether or not Krishna will release us from prarabdha karma. That's another point. Because this thing, the point has got relevance. I know it's a bit kind of boring or whatever, but it's got some relevance, which I'll try and get to. But if the... whether Krishna will release you from prarabdha is another question. There have, like Krishna says, sarva dharma paricchaya ja mame kam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva pape bhyo moksha yishami masuchaha. Krishna will release us from all karma. He can release us from all karma. But it's very rare to find a devotee for whom he's done that. Very rare. One example in the Bhagavatam is Sudama. Sudama was given, there was a rearrangement of his prarabdha. He was supposed to be destitute, but Krishna gave him all opulences. Another example is Bali Maharaj. He was supposed to be full of opulences. Krishna made him destitute. There are many examples where Krishna didn't take away the devotee's prarabdha karma. Narada Muni, for example, didn't take away his prarabdha karma. He reached a very high platform, and then he was told, you won't see me again for this life, you'll have to continue with your prarabdha, and in your next life you'll be born as Narada Muni. Dhruva Maharaj wasn't released from his prarabdha karma. He saw the Supreme Lord face to face. Then he went back and he had his kingdom. And there's a verse in the Bhagavatam which describes that through enjoyment, he dissipated the results of his past pious activities, and through austerities, he dissipated the results of his past impious activities. So Dhruva Maharaj wasn't released from his prarabdha karma. Maharaj Priyavrata wasn't released from his prarabdha karma. He didn't want... Lord Brahma was trying to encourage him to take charge of the universe. He wasn't interested because it would be bad for his Krishna consciousness. But there was a big discussion, Narada Muni, Lord Brahma, and the demigods. And Lord Brahma instructed him that you should take it that this is your prarabdha. The word is there, arabdha. You should take that this is your prarabdha karma. Just do it. Just do it. Keep your mind focused on Krishna. And don't worry, at the end, you'll come back to me. So the point is that I'm trying to say is that we should not think that Krishna is going to take away all our karma. That's not the mood of a devotee. Prabhupada says the mood of a devotee is that because of my past sinful activities, I should be suffering much worse than I'm suffering now. But because Krishna is merciful, he's given me just a token reaction. That's Prabhupada's general advice for the devotees. Now, Prabhupada didn't spend so long, generally, he didn't spend so long going into the intricacies of the knowledge of the Upanishads and the Vedic literature and all that type of thing. He gave instructions which are very much to the point. But when you study that instruction, why he said what he said, it carries with it a huge weight of knowledge behind it. He just said a very simple point, you know, it was very common, easy to understand for people in this world. He says, a devotee doesn't think that when a devotee suffers, a devotee thinks, because of my past sinful activities, I'm suffering. But Krishna has just given me a token reaction. But what that means is that Krishna has the ability to do anything. He has the ability to remove all our prarabdha karma, all of our karma. But he doesn't do that generally. So a devotee, he shouldn't be so puffed up to think that because I'm so advanced, I'm released from all my karma. A devotee keeps himself very humble. Trinadapi Sunichena. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was always on about that verse. He said it's the key to success in the chanting of the holy names, to become more humble than the straw in the street. So a devotee is thinking, there's no particular reason why I deserve any special mercy. I'm going to experience my karma. But Krishna is so merciful that he's just given me token reaction. So, because Krishna generally doesn't take away our karma, we should know that everything that's happening in our life is our karma. Everything that's happened in the past is our karma. Everything that's going to happen in the future is our karma. So, whether you get married, whether you don't get married, whether you're happy, whether you suffer, whether you go here, whether you go there, whatever happens, it's going to happen anyway. It's going to happen anyway. There's nothing you can do about it. Sometimes you try very hard, like Prabhupada gave the example of two people who open up a shop. Like, I mean, Prabhupada in his grihastha life was a businessman, wasn't he? He owned a chemist. So he gave examples like that. So two people open up a shop, the same type of shop, in the same area. One of them becomes a millionaire and the other one becomes bankrupt. So he gave that example. Now, that example is kind of in the external world, in a sense. You see that example. There's another deeper, you can go a bit deeper into understanding how karma works. Two people are living in the world. One of them decides to open up a shop and the other one doesn't. Why does one decide to do one thing and someone else decides to do something different? You see, we're so obsessed. We think that, okay, we hear we're not the body, so we can think, I'm not the body. You know, I have a sense that I'm not the body. Because, like, sometimes I'm sitting on the bus or whatever and I'm daydreaming. And then all of a sudden I realize, oh, you know, I'm sitting on the bus. So we have a life separate from the physical body. It's quite easy to understand that I'm not the body. You know, when the body is not giving us any trouble. When the body starts giving us trouble, then we suddenly become the body very strongly. But if the body's not giving us trouble, we have a life in the mind which is separate from the physical body. But we're not the body means we're not the mind also. We're not the mind. So when the mind is moving according to the modes of nature, according to the modes of nature which we've acquired due to our past karma, the mind is moving. So why is one person's mind moving in one way and another person's mind is moving in another way? That's the question. Like, why is it that those two people decided to open up a shop and someone else is not interested in opening up a shop? That's the question of karma. Your karma is dictating your thoughts. You know, we're thinking that our karma is dictating what happens to our body, but our karma is dictating what happens to our thoughts. Our karma is operating on a level more subtle than our mind, more subtle than the thoughts, because prakriti is more subtle than the elements of prakriti. So prakriti is dictating to us what we're going to think. So if we have this thought that's coming back in our mind again and again and again, the point is to recognize that this thought is not me. It's not mine. It's not my thought. So material nature is forcing a person to act. You know? Like, for example, let's say there's a married couple and they decide, we've had some children and that's it. You know, we've had enough children. We don't want any more children. But let's say if karma is dictating that another child is to be born in that family, then all of a sudden the thought will pop into the mind. You think, oh, you know, I was thinking, maybe we should have another child. And then, yeah, that's a good idea, you know. And then have another child. And then afterwards they think, what did we do that for? You know? Because if karma is dictating that a child has to be born in that situation, then a child will be born in that situation. And the mechanism is that your thoughts will change. And you'll start thinking, oh, it's a really good idea, actually. You know? That's how it happens. So we're thinking we're in control. Like, the question came up yesterday. A very good question that Krishna says of the senses, I am the mind. So Krishna says he's the mind. So if through the yoga process we're supposed to control the mind, then in one sense we're going to control Krishna. So how is it possible to control Krishna if Krishna says he's the mind? So there are many different answers. And one other answer is that you won't control the mind, because the mind is Krishna's energy. Krishna controls us through the medium of the mind. The mind meaning the subtle body, the mind, intelligence, false ego. Krishna controls us like a bull is controlled by a rope through the nose. Similarly, all living entities are controlled in this world through the medium of the false ego, through the medium of the mind. So you won't control the mind. It's not possible. It won't happen. So then why are we told to control the mind? That's explained in chapters in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6. Anatmanastrishatrutve. Bandhuratmatmanastasya yenatmeva atmana jitaha. Anatmanastrishatrutve. Bhartaitatmeva shatrubat. It says, a person who's conquered the mind becomes the best of friends. Shishi Radha Gokulananda Kijai. For a person who's conquered the mind remains the best of friends. But for a person who's failed to conquer the mind remains the worst enemy. Now, the mind remaining the mind, the person who has not controlled the mind, a person who has controlled the mind is called jitta, jitaha. Jitta means to control. But for a person who does not control the mind, you would expect Krishna to say ajitaha, means it's not controlled. But he doesn't say ajitaha, he says anatmaha, anatmaha. So a person who has not controlled the mind is described as a person who is not the soul. Anatma. He is not Atma. He is not the soul. He has become the body. Because of the influence of false ego, prakriti krimanani gunai karmani sarvasaha, ahankara, vimudhatma, karta hamiti manyate. Because of the influence of the false ego, the person has taken on a false identity, like us. We're thinking I'm this body. Because we're thinking I'm this body, we're called Anatma, means we're not the soul anymore. So if we want to get to a point of controlling the mind, then the point is we have to understand that we're not the body. We're not the mind. That's how you control the mind. Now, when we control the mind, it doesn't mean that you'll be able to control the mind and make the mind follow your whims, you know? Like, we have this idea that someone's very disciplined, and if he decides to fast, he can fast. If he decides to, you know, chant 120 rounds, he can chant 120 rounds. He's so disciplined. But that's just another feature of the false ego. Because if the false ego has a particular quality, according to modes of nature, he's got a strength of willpower, then he can do all these things. And if he hasn't got that, by karma, if he hasn't got that discipline, then he won't do those things. But that's not spiritual self-control, that's just self-discipline. There's so many self-disciplined people in this world, running really fast in the Olympics, or whatever they're doing. So self-disciplined. So we can use the self-discipline to make advancement in our sadhana. But in order to come to the level of realization, we have to realize that we're not the body. And when we realize we're not the body, we'll realize that the mind will just act according to its modes of nature. And we shouldn't stand in the way too much. And then we'll have a peaceful life. That was the instruction given to Maharaj Priyavrata. What happens? Let what happens happen. You know, recognize that there's a higher force at work, more than just our little willpower, you know. Like sometimes, you know, we'd be, okay, getting up 4 o'clock every morning, and you're doing it for ages, and then all of a sudden you think, and you flake out, and you get covered by the mode of ignorance, and it's just not possible anymore, you know. So that's the mind. We should recognize the distinction between the mind and the self. That's the way to control the mind. So Maharaj Nimi, he was aware of these things, and he was aware of the influence of karma, and he was aware that life can end at any time. So he decided not to wait. He decided not to wait, and he decided to engage in Krishna consciousness straight away. Well, he decided to perform the sacrifice straight away. And Prabhupada says in the purport, he says the human form of life. In the human form of life, one should perform activities in such a way that at the end, he goes back home, back to Godhead. This is self-realization. So this is what we do here. This is what we do here. In different places, different people do different things. Like in Canary Wharf, they do business. Say, that's what we do here. So here, we engage in self-realization. That's what we do here. That's what we're supposed to do here. We don't do anything else here. We're not here to make money. We're not here to have a comfortable life. You know, we're not here to get a big pat on the back, a big ego. We're not here to settle into a comfortable society and you know, have a nice little existence in this world. We're here for self-realization. That's why we're here. That's why Prabhupada came to the Western world. That's why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, advented in this world, to get it into our brains that there's nothing worthwhile here. There's nothing worthwhile here. The only thing that's worthwhile in this world has come from somewhere else. It's come from the spiritual world. Golok era premadan, harinam sankirtan. That the only worthwhile thing in this world is that thing which has been brought into this world by Krishna, by Lord Chaitanya. That's the only worthwhile thing. So because that thing, the only worthwhile thing has been brought from somewhere else, that means there's nothing worthwhile in this world. There's nothing here worth having. Some people have picked this message up through previous lives and they're not so bothered with this world and they just absorb themselves in Krishna consciousness and get out from here. Like Jad Bharat, for example. Jad Bharat. So Bharat Maharaj, he renounced his kingdom. He was young enough. He had a young family. He had a beautiful wife. He had a whole palace. He had loads of wealth. He had everything. And he gave it up. It's described in the Bhagavatam. Not my words. He gave it up just like a person renounces his stool after passing it. That's how he gave up, you know. And there was one sannyasi, he said, you know, after you pass stool and you leave the place, there's no fond farewells, he said. There's no sad goodbyes. He was sitting there one day and he thought, ah, and he just left. And they're all sitting there. He didn't say, I'm going now. May I have your permission? May I have a letter? I'm just saying. May I have a letter from my wife to say that she's okay with me taking sannyas? He didn't even tell her. He didn't tell anybody. They're just sitting there and he's gone. I said, I wonder where he's gone. And then he just never came back. And he went to the forest. So he went to the forest and everybody knows the pastime. He made advancement up to the level of bhav. Adau Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti, Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, Prema. He came to Bhav, and then he became attached to a deer. Because it's described in the Madhurya Kadambini that Anartha Nivritti, we have this thing called Beda Buddhi, where we like to divide everything into categories. We like to divide everything into categories. So first there's Shraddha. Faith, then bhajana, shraddha, sadhu sangha, associate with devotees, then bhajana kriya, and then while doing bhajan, practicing devotional service, then anartha navritti, the anarthas disappear, then there's nishta, then there's ruchi, then there's asakti, then there's bhava. So Bharat Maharaj attained the platform of bhava, but he still had anartha. So anartha navritti means that the anarthas disappear from the heart. The unwanted things, the material attachments, they disappear at different rates and in different quantities. So some anarthas are gone. We can say, cut down to ground level. The roots may still be there. Some anarthas are still glaringly obvious to everybody except the person themselves. You know what I mean? Like the person's thinking, I'm not attached to name and fame. And everybody else can see this person so puffed up, but that person themselves can't see, you know. And that's the case for all of us. We all have these things that everybody can tell, and then they tell us. And well, you know, maybe I don't know. Sometimes brahmacharis don't get told, but grahastas get told all your anarthas all the time. And you think, no, that's not true. That's not true, you know. And then years and years later, you think, God, that's true. They've been telling me for years, and I didn't accept it, but it's a bit true. So, anyway, the point being that Prabhupada gets very heavy in one purport with Bharat Maharaj. He says that if he was to leave behind his whole family and go to the forest and then become attached to a deer, he says, what was the point in his leaving home? He says, there's a purport. He's so heavy. I read it and I was thinking, oh my God, he's talking about Bharat Maharaj. But he's so heavy. He says, what was the point in his leaving home? What was the point in his leaving home? Because sometimes Prabhupada would make comments in his purports related to things that were going on in his movement. And I'm not sure if that's a specific incident, but generally Prabhupada did that. And for someone to renounce and then go back, and the Sanskrit word is fantasy. He eats his own vomit, you know. There's not many people eat their own vomit. But, you know, it's a very heavy term, but it's there. It's not recommended. So anyway, he took birth as a deer, but because of his spiritual advancement, he could remember his previous life. So he avoided association with mundane deers, and he went and he associated with sadhus. Then in his next life, he took birth as Jadbharat. And he deliberately, because he could remember his previous lives, he made a point from the beginning, I'm not getting involved in this world at all. I'm not even speaking. I'm not even going to speak. And this is quite a common thing. It's very rare. But it's not unknown in spiritual circles. For example, Shankaracharya, when he was traveling through India, he met one boy who is exactly the same. He had Brahmana parents, but the boy appeared dumb. And then he hadn't spoken a word his whole life. And there's a thing called the Hastamalika Gita, which is the verses which were chanted by this boy to Shankaracharya. Because Shankaracharya said to him, he recognized his spiritual potency, and he said to him, he says, who are you? You know. And then the boy spoke first time, and he spoke like basically pure Vedanta philosophy. He said, what I'm not. I'm not this body, I'm not this mind. I'm the pure transcendental self. Obviously it's a different tradition. But the point is, there are personalities like that. Jadbharat was the same. He was full in transcendental knowledge, but he didn't want anything to do with this world. So the point I'm trying to make is that each one of us, we wouldn't be sitting here if we thought this world was a great place. You know, we wouldn't be sitting here if we all had a great time in the world. There's a devotee, Tribhuvanath Prabhu, who used to say, you don't join a religious organization because you're a success story. You're here because you're a failure. You wouldn't be here otherwise. But even though we're failures, still we can't surrender. Still we just can't surrender. You know? Why? Because the ego is just too strong. The ego is too strong. So the process of Krishna consciousness means we have to practice Krishna consciousness, recognize our level, and fan the spark. That was Prabhupada's recommendation. We fan the spark. So we have to fan our own spark. Like sometimes we're obsessed with fanning everybody else's spark. You know, because we go out on preaching programs and we try and find someone who's interested and we try and encourage them in Krishna consciousness. We have to encourage ourselves also. Because if we're not encouraged ourselves, if we're not enthusiastic ourselves, then what use are we to anybody else? So we have to recognize our spark. Another way to say it, we have to recognize our Bhakti Lata Bij. The Bhakti Lata Bij is that little bit inside us which is desiring Krishna. The weeds in the heart are those things inside us which are desiring wealth, fame, position, relationships, children, whatever it is. All are anartas. So instead of giving attention to the anartas, we should give attention to the Bhakti Lata Bij. We should give attention to that little bit inside us which is attached to Krishna. In the Madhurya Kadambini, it's described that sadhana bhakti comes in two forms, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti and Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. And Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, there's a verse, there's an example of a verse given in the third canto describing they all experience me as their most dear friend. There's a list of the devotees, and they experience me as their most dear friend. And it's described, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he uses that verse, and he describes that Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti means you feel like you have a relationship with Krishna. You feel like you have a relationship with Krishna. And that feeling that I have a friendship with Krishna, that's the impetus for us to engage in sadhana. The sadhana is still regulated. We're still following the rules of sadhana. But the reason we're following the rules of sadhana is because I feel like Krishna is part of my life. I like him. He's my friend. Whereas Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we're following the rules. But why are we following the rules? Because of discipline. And there's a verse quoted in Madhurya Kadambini describing that you should know my presence throughout in the hearts of all living entities, describing the supersoul. So the difference is that we recognize the existence of God, God's existence. Because God exists, I have a duty to worship God, and I can make advancement by following the rules and regulations according to discipline, according to the order of the spiritual master and Shastra. That's Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti is where we have some softness or some affection for Krishna. And because that feeling is there, then we're following the rules of sadhana. So in both cases, it's described that they both yield the same result of kleshagni, relief from material distress, and shubha, bestowing all auspiciousness on the person. But you have to ask the question, which one is nicer? Which one is nicer? The Bhakti Lata Beej is described, anyone who does gardening, plants generally come up, a tiny little green shoot, and then two leaves. And the upper side of the leaves is a little bit softer than the lower side. The lower side is a bit rough. So the lower side of the Bhakti Lata Beej represents Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. It's a bit rough. The upper side represents Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. It's a bit softer. So sometimes if somebody is absorbed in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, then they go around smashing the devotees. That point came up before. Do it, just do it, you know, just do it. It's in the box, it says you should do it, therefore you should do it, you know. That's the mood. And if you don't do it, you're in Maya, you know. So, you know, it's there. But it's described in Madhurya Kadambini, it's a little bit rough. The same thing can be done in another way. Like Prabhupada was asked a question. The devotee said, it's described in the Bhagavatam that until we're free, isn't it something like that? Until we're free from gross anarthas, we should not look on the face of Krishna. We should only look on his lotus feet. Isn't it something like that? There's a quote like that. And the answer came back. Prabhupada said, how can you live without looking at Krishna's face? So the same thing, instead of smashing a person with harsh words, the same encouragement can be given. Why not, you know? Why not? It's nice. You know, like, I'll give you, like, for example, my own life. I was at work yesterday, you know, so working in a fire station. And I'm not going to tell you what the conversation was about, but I'm sure you can use your imagination. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, it's just, God, it's just rough. This life, this world is rough. The people are rough. You know what I mean? Their life is centered around, you know, they break the four regulative principles. They don't even consider it as regulative principles. You know, that's their life, you know. And I'm thinking, God, I'd rather be with the devotees, you know. You know what I mean? Because what do devotees do? They chant the holy names, have prasadam, discuss topics of Krishna. It's nice. Why not? You know? What do you want to do instead? You know what I mean? Like, you want to get a job and go to... I won't go into it. I'm just saying, if a person, like we all are in this situation, we're in this situation now, for whatever reason we're here, and whatever things are going on in our life are going on, the things that are going on in our life, with our body, with our mind, it's part of our karma. But the opportunity here is that we're here, and we have the opportunity to experience something beyond the mind, beyond the body. So why not take it? Why not take it? That was Prabhupada's advice, wasn't it? You know, it's here. Take the opportunity and do it. So it's 8:30. Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuranam Ki Jai. Any comments or questions?